Ryan, man. I know you're dying to ask. Ask me about these dumbass glasses.
What's going on with your glasses? They're pretty cool. You look like a Malcolm X.
Oh, yeah.
Malcolm X style. Or even better yet, I'll give Falling Down, the movie with Michael Douglas.
Oh, okay.
Very similar to his.
So, a few years ago, I started needing cheaters to read. But because I don't need them to see normally, I have a tendency to leave the house without them and then come upon some situation where I need to read. So I've got all these different cheaters that I've bought at Walmart or Walgreens or whatever. And generally, whichever pair I grab is the pair that I use. And they've all got the same strength. But I am not a small dude, and I have a huge head. So everything that I get, even the biggest ones I get, like clamp onto my head and like start pushing on my temples.
I used to have that problem.
Giving me a little headache. So it's very hard for me to read lately. So anyway, I finally got tired of it and went to the eye doctor and got a prescription that I could send up. So I got some glasses coming that should fit my head. And you probably can't notice just by looking at, but these fuckers drive me nuts. So hopefully here in the next few days, I'll receive that delivery, and I ordered them online. So they have this little thing where you upload a picture of your face.
And you try to match the glasses to it.
And you never realize how ugly you are until you upload a picture of your own face. You're like, damn. So.
No, I actually wear contacts. Okay. I haven't worn glasses in a long time.
My eyes are too sensitive. I can't do the sticking a finger.
Mine used to be too dry from the medicine I took from Crohn's disease. I couldn't wear them for the longest time.
Mm.
And finally got off that medication. And I used to do a lot of snorkeling.
Okay.
So it was either get prescription goggles or wear contacts.
Interesting. Well, I've always prided myself, not prided myself, it was just, it's kind of like you have a hand with all five fingers and they work. So you're kind of like, oh, no problem, I can see. And then one day you're like,
What's that say?
So
yes, your kids. Can you read that for me?
Yeah. So hopefully I'll have a. So that's what's new with me.
They're like hipster though, man. They're stylish. You change your name to Kyle and grow a real long beard. Get a fixed gear bicycle. You'll be good to go.
Sweet. I've always wanted to live that hipster life.
Golden Girls tattoo, all kinds of stuff.
I was always just too fat for skinny jeans. Welcome everybody to episode 32
Hello.
Of the Scary Dad Podcast. Like I said, we're at episode 32. We've crossed that magic threshold of 30 and even 31. And if you've been paying attention, we've had a couple of episodes in between. Scotty just got back from Comicpalooza.
Yeah.
We've got a recap episode that hit late last week. If you checked out, you got episode 31.5, which is where I sat with the guys two of the guys and one of the girls from Dudes and Beer and Yes But Why podcast, and we talked about our favorite scary movies. So now we're moving on. We're back on track with a regular scheduled program, episode 32, in which it's entitled Femme Fatales.
Yes, those evil women.
Evil women. You ever seen what is the movie? John Cusack. It's not High Fidelity. It's the one where he stands there with the boombox over his head.
Yeah, the trench coat and everything.
Say Anything.
Yeah, that's it.
There's a scene where just all the guys sitting around behind the convenience store smoking and drinking. They're all talking about how their women done them wrong. And they keep passing the beer. And he gets down. And there's like a 9-year-old kid. And he's just like, bitches, man.
I remember that scene.
So we're going to talk about them bitches, man. And this isn't some kind of anti-feminist rant. These bitches were evil. Evil. So we'll get into that in a second. We're going to talk about some people in history, but first we got to get into the dun-dun-dun history segment.
Let's do it.
So, on this date, May 22nd of 334, Alexander the Great defeats Darius III of Persia. It's a pretty heavy hit for the Persians. Since
yes, they were running things.
They were running things, and Alexander said, nah.
not today.
Not today.
9 miles.
On this date in 1176, the Hashashin, which are the assassins,
yeah,
attempt to murder Saladin near Aleppo.
Seems like yesterday, 1176.
Right? Well, you know, Aleppo is the area of Syria where it's kind of the main point where all of the shit's going down yeah. right now. With Russia and the rebels and the Syrian government and all of the shit that's happening is happening in or near Aleppo. And libertarian presidential candidate, shit, what was his name? Gary...
Oh, damn it.
I voted for him. I can't remember his name.
He was funny.
I voted for him because I just couldn't... I could not push the button on either of the other two clowns. I was like, this is a clown too, but he's not wearing the big-ass hat.
I can't remember that man's name. I can't believe that. I remember news clips I saw of him, you know, just being goofy. I can't remember his name.
When they asked him about Aleppo, he didn't know where it was. And everybody made fun of him, like, how are you going to run foreign policy? And I thought, well, that's probably the better way. If you don't know where shit's going down, you won't bomb shit there. They'd probably keep us out of it.
There was one, he had this, like, little weird debate against another independent candidate in, like, a school gym, you know, in the middle of the basketball court. And they were, I think it was marijuana they were arguing about the effects of it on the body and cause heart attacks. And in the middle of the debate, he feigns a heart attack and falls on the floor.
Yeah.
And the woman's going, that's not funny. That's not funny at all.
It was funny, dude.
Yeah, it was funny as hell. Reminded me of that Canadian mayor that used to do all that crazy shit at Ford.
Right?
Yeah.
Gary Johnson.
Johnson, that's it.
Couldn't think of it because it was too simple. So anyway... If you ever heard of somebody being assassinated, that comes from this Hashashin. They were a group of, they were basically a special forces group of an Islamic sect, but rather than go out and fight face to face, they did a whole bunch of psyops and covert infiltration and covert stuff back in 1176, and they would attempt to basically take out the enemy by assassinating their leaders.
The leader, right.
And that's how the assassins got their name. And they were... A lot of their exploits are maybe exaggerated by legend, but like the Crusaders were terrified of the assassins. But anytime you hear the word assassin, it's because there was a there was basically a CIA of this ancient group.
Well, weren't they... that was one of the characters mentioned in 300. Wasn't it one of the groups that came out to fight?
No.
Okay,
no.
For some reason, I remember there being like a group of assassins that people didn't see. In the real... It was a similar type of a...
Yeah, they were similar. That was the Royal Guard.
Okay.
That was the Immortals.
Yes, that's what I was thinking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, that was a similar, but this... 1176, so Alexander the Great defeats Darius in 334. 300 predates Alexander the Great by quite a while.
Okay.
So... 1906, the Wright brothers are given a patent for their flying machine.
Yes.
Bicycles.
And they came up with popcorn shortly after. When I was a kid, I used to always get that mixed up. It's like, Orville, isn't that the guy that did
that? That would be the Redenbacher biplane that you need to get into. On to natural disasters. On this date in 1922 in Xining, China, an earthquake kills 200,000 people.
Damn, that's a lot.
That is a lot. Especially considering they didn't have buildings to collapse on them and stuff.
Right.
They're just like in little huts and, you know, they're in buildings, they're in houses and stuff, but they're not in concrete things that'll collapse and crush a whole bunch of people all at once. This is just widespread floods and fires and all the stuff that goes with an earthquake. That's insanity.
Well, it's like when you look at those mudslides that occur in South America once in a while, you know, it's just their houses are buried.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just,
everything just gets covered. And on this date in 1973, President Nixon confesses to the Watergate cover-up. I don't know if he was president at the time, or I think he might have already
resigned. Resigned, yeah.
But I'm not a crook, except for when I was.
The man was a walking caricature too. It's funny. It fell into that perfectly.
Notable births. This date in 1859, Arthur Conan Doyle. So thank the 22nd for Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, yes.
I wrote down Laurence Olivier, but I think he was
Prince
only...
Prince of Arabia.
Yeah, he was only in one movie that I know of.
The only one I could think of.
This date in 1942, Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber.
Yes, we mentioned him on the podcast.
We talked about him before. You know, I mean, he was a hermit in the woods. He probably wasn't watching the news. But you know when your mugshot or your police sketch is a generic white dude in a hoodie with sunglasses. You're probably going to get away for a while.
You're good to go. Stay where you're at.
1959, Morrissey from the Smiths.
I love the Smiths. We used to call their greatest hits of 101 Ways to Kill Yourself because the songs are just... Girlfriend in a Coma, Hang the DJ.
Oh yeah,
but awesome songs, man.
Last night I dreamt that somebody loved me. No hope, no harm, just another false alarm.
Wish you a very unhappy birthday.
Mm-hmm. So to die by your side is such a heavenly way to die.
But he classic songs, man. It's such a... I mean,
just, I love Morrissey.
I love discography is just huge.
This date in 1972, Max Brooks, who brought us World War Z. Okay. The book, not the movie. The book is good. Just the previews of the movie didn't look like it was something I wanted to see. But it is a phenomenal book if you ever get a chance to read it. Notable deaths. 337, Constantine the Great.
It's a name you don't hear very often anymore.
No, you really don't.
I met a Constantine the other day, though. He's a college-age guy. Which I thought was very cool, his dad gave him that name.
You want to get into some controversial subject matter on Constantine?
Sure.
So,
if we have to, we'll get out of it quick, but...
Yeah, we can. It doesn't have to be a very long discussion. I'm going to preface this with, you're not Catholic, are you?
I was at one time.
You were at one time.
Yes.
So, you know, in Christianity, basically, the rise of Christianity happened during... the reign of the Roman Empire. Mm-hmm. And Constantine was the first Christian emperor of Rome. He's the first one to convert and become emperor. Well, Rome was a very pagan culture.
Right.
Well, there's been multiple rifts in Christianity, and one of the biggest ones was the difference between Catholicism and Protestantism. And to completely oversimplify, because it's massively complicated, but Protestantism rose with Martin Luther, for better or for worse, essentially letting the Bible fall into the hands of the common man. Before, if you were going to go to worship, the knowledge, the Bible itself, was in the hands of the priests.
And he interpreted it the way he wanted to you.
Right. And following Martin Luther, then you could read it and you could extrapolate things for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that caused a big rift in the church because they were holding on to power. They were the government at the time. They held on to power. If you could read the Bible for yourself and pick or choose what matters, what's real, what's not real,
or interpret these broad, just generalized statements yourself, and
well, for example, the priest says you need to do this and you go read through the Bible and it doesn't say that anywhere, then you can go back and be like, nah, I'm not going to do that, and then as more and more people walk away, the power slips. So anyway, growing up as a Baptist, Protestant, Baptist.
I was about to say something very controversial, Bob. Rephrase.
Like, so what's the deal with all this? Well, I don't remember who said it. It was a book I read or something that was saying that the whole concept, like the whole church, the church, the Catholic Church, was basically formed as a response to Constantine converting. Because the moment Constantine converted, he put out an edict that said, if you're not Christian, you're done. So all of these priests started going and carving all of the gods and turning them into the saints. And all of their concubines turned into Vestal Virgins, which later became nuns. And the whole structure kind of fell out from that, mm-hmm. from these pagan priests trying to quickly convert, but not having any way to dispose of their old icons. Now, you ask a Catholic about that, they get kind of upset. But I've read into it, and it's actually pretty true.
Right.
And so a lot of this stuff is not biblical. It's reactionary and political. So, like I said, a little controversial there. I don't have any skin in the game. I'm just saying what I read in a story, or, you know, in a history book. It was a slanted history book. It was kind of leaning towards the side of the Protestants on that one, but kind of makes you look at a lot of the ceremony and stuff with fresh eyes and look at it and be like, is this what God really wanted?
Right.
For you to dress up the Jupiter statue? I don't think that's in the Ten Commandments there, bro. But anyway.
As the other Constantine that I enjoy reading about would say, your rituals lack enthusiasm.
Right.
Now, but I want to say, in closing on that one, I would like for you to close the show with Monty Python's The Meaning of Life, where he explains the difference between Protestants and Catholics.
Got it.
Because that is the first thing I thought of when you mentioned both.
The bright side of life, or the cutout?
The cutout.
Okay.
Yeah.
Might not have a musical extralude, but we will. I'll put something on there. I want to put some Morrissey on there. We're going to end with Morrissey.
No joke. Yeah, I agree with you on that one. We'll pick a good song.
Now, I can't, like...
Well, what I'll do is we can just link the video for that scene on the website.
Organic podcast, guys. This is us talking about a little bit of show prep, but you get to listen to the behind the scenes. So we did our serial killers episode, and we talked about how that one serial killer in England would kill the kids out on the moors, mm-hmm. and that the Smiths wrote a song. It's called Suffer the Children.
Yes.
And we did that whole episode, and that was actually the exit music for that episode. But now we're doing Evil Bitches. Now that bitch killed the kids on the moors and then went back and joined the search parties, knowing where they were. Yeah, she was that sadistic. So it would fit here, but we're not going to repeat exit music. There's too many great songs. But I will find some Smiths for this. And with this, I'm going to circle.
Girlfriend in a Coma.
Right.
My daughter, when I listen to the Smiths, she tells me, just, Daddy, please. That's enough of it. And she loves the music, but just the words, is just, she can't handle that. You know, I want to go ahead and get into some current topics and news that have been kind of grinding my gears lately. A couple things. One thing that's grinding my gears this week that when I heard about it, I just couldn't stand. As you know, they're doing a Crow reboot, which I'm already unhappy about.
Right.
Did you see who they got cast as playing?
I do.
Okay. Do you think that makes sense at all that Jason Momoa is going to be playing the Croak?
No, not really.
He's about 60 pounds too heavy.
For just his build and just his look compared to the character in the comics.
You know, because I'm a big fan of the comics. I've always been a big fan of the comics since before the movie. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't make sense to me when I saw that.
No, I mean, I like Jason Momoa. He's about to play Aquaman. And I'm a purist. Aquaman should be wearing at least... I mean, they managed to take...
Where's the orange?
Right. They managed to take Captain America's chainmail and his costume and modernize it in such a way that it's relatable and practical in battle, without it looking, but it's still blue and it's still got the star on the chest and it's still got the little the flag motif.
You recognize it.
You recognize his costume. Now Captain America wears plate mail. If you're looking at his outfit, it's mm-hmm. actually a chainmail outfit. Aquaman has a shirt that looks similar to fish scales.
Right.
And it's orange. I don't know. I'm more of a purist. You could do a burnt orange. It doesn't have to necessarily be...
But be reminiscent.
And Aquaman's blonde.
Yep.
You know, but seeing the previews, he does look like he's going to do a good job as that version of Aquaman. And he was really good at Game of Thrones. So I want to give him as an actor the benefit of the doubt. That's a casting agent that should have pulled somebody else.
And I just want to give a shout out to one of our very fervent listeners, Jackie. Me and I was with her today going through some comic books. Me and her were talking about this. And my thing was, you know, when I look at that, that's not the Justice League.
Mm-mm.
You know, I grew up with the Justice League. I remember what they looked like, and that is not them.
Of the characters, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman look good. The Flash is too dark.
Yeah.
Aquaman is too dark. Well, the entire scenery is too dark. But it bugs me that the Flash is red, and everywhere the Flash goes, he has either orange or yellow, or even sometimes red lightning that follows him. But in the trailer, his lightning's blue. What is he, a Sith now? Come on, that's not right. This is the wrong kind of lightning. The
other thing that shocked me about this Crow reboot is that Barr is involved with it heavily. And I'm really surprised. One thing I'm surprised about is that he is involved with it heavily, because as you may or may not know, after the original Crow was released, he actually gave up pretty much all the money, because he felt as though it was blood money. The reason the movie was so successful was because Brandon Lee died, and he didn't want to profit off of that. But he's remaking the movie, and to me, that's disrespectful to the memory of Brandon Lee.
On the Brandon Lee subject, I wouldn't say that the movie was successful because he died. I think it definitely got a boost.
Yeah, it got more people were talking about it, you know.
Well, it made the entire story that much more tragic, and it made it more real. It made the story more real.
Right.
Because the tragedy of the story is that he's dead.
Right.
And he's dead before his time in a tragic accident. And so by Brandon Lee having actually died, it made it more poignant.
Yeah.
But that was a universal thing. If he would have died in a car accident or a suicide or, you know, I don't know, had bacon splatter on his, you know, and somehow kill him or whatever, he still would have died an untimely death, and it would have still made the tragic story of love and loss much more relatable to the audience. So I don't know, unless he knew somebody behind the scenes that was really pushing the button on the exploitation, like, let's really...
Right, well, you can imagine a meeting where somebody makes that comment.
Of course. But you can't apologize for having created the story and then having something bad happen. As far as the reboot and the memory of Brandon Lee, like, I get it, and my teenage self is there. I'm like, I you should just leave this one alone. But I can't be, like, I never saw any of the sequels because I was so much of a purist. As far as I was concerned, the Crow took Brandon's soul at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And that story was over.
But a sequel should be a totally different chain of events.
Right. So, if they're going to make it, he's a capable actor. Eric Draven was a rock and roll player. He wasn't a martial artist or any kind of combat guy. So, if they're to make it, he's got a rock and roll look. I mean, he looks like somebody that just walked off a stage.
Yeah.
So, it could work. If he can... channel the emotion, if he can channel not just the rage of the Crow, because if you remember in the books and even in the movie, he was only really angry when he was faced with one of the bad guys.
Right.
The rest of the time he was sad, and he was remembering his lost love. If he can do that, which to me is 90% of the performance, and they're going to make it anyway, and you can't stop it, then I'll give it a shake.
I'm just worried that, you know, with his look and everything, they're going to make it a superhero movie.
That is probably what's going to end up happening.
Yeah.
I just have to wonder, and I have to hope, with James O'Barr being on board, and with everybody knowing kind of how touchy that is, that they'll make the right decisions.
Right. Well, before we move on to some good movie news, we're going to hit one more one that the Hellboy reboot is coming up. Sans everybody that should be in it.
Yeah, we were talking about that one earlier.
There's a name that has popped up that may be playing Hellboy. David Harbour from Stranger Things. What do you think of that?
I think it's a complete opposite discussion from The Crow, because Ron Perlman is still active.
Yeah.
He doesn't look any older now than he did when he played the Beast in Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
He is and was the perfect Hellboy. Perfect. He could not have gotten better casting.
Yeah, for that character. He was excellent at it.
The whole rest of the cast was excellent. Those movies are brilliant. And Guillermo del Toro with his visuals, we were talking about it before, where you don't need 20 minutes of exposition trying to show you what kind of strange world you're living in. It's just his atmosphere building tells you that you're in a strange...
And, you know, they still got a heavy hitter that's going to direct. Neil Marshall from Game of Thrones and The Descent. But it's going to be a different type of movie. That's the thing. It's going to be different type of visual, different type of setup, just like you were saying. It's not going to be the same. I don't think it's going to have the same chemistry that the original ones had.
I think... I've only ever seen that dude in Stranger Things. And Stranger Things was a good show. But it doesn't... I mean, Ron Perlman just has...
He's the perfect Hellboy.
Yeah.
The personality, build, look,
voice,
everything.
The look. Just the eyes. If you don't do anything but the eyes, it's the perfect Hellboy.
Right.
I'm gonna have to be on the fence until I see some still shots or a trailer.
Okay. Okay, a little bit of fun stuff with the news. Have you seen the trailers for Stephen King's The Mist? The television show coming out.
I have heard that they're brilliant.
It's
I have not
badass.
Seen them yet.
It looks like it's an R-rated horror movie.
Okay.
I'm totally into this. And Mist is one of my favorite Stephen King stories. I really enjoyed it. The movie that they made, I think they could have done a little bit better, because it veered away. The ending veered away from the book, which I like the way the book ended. Just left it out there for you to figure out what happened.
That was one of the hardest to swallow
endings.
The ending
of the movie, because I wasn't expecting it, because I'd read the book. It took something away from me. Yeah. Yeah, it actually took something away from me seeing that. It was just heartbreaking, man.
Absolutely. And if you watch the first season of Walking Dead, you see all those people die again. Because Frank Darabont uses...
Yeah.
Frank Darabont did Shawshank Redemption, and he did The Mist, and he did Walking Dead. So in Walking Dead, the actresses and actors... the lawyer in Shawshank Redemption was Dale from The Walking Dead. He was also in The Mist.
Okay.
He's in the back seat. He was like the grandpa or the older guy. Andrea was in it. Carol was in it. Several of the people from Walking Dead were in The Mist. It's kind of rough watching them die again after...
Yeah, like I said, I just was not expecting that end. Okay, another interesting tidbit of movie news, which I'm pretty excited about, because you know I am a big Puppet Master fan. Puppet Master, The Littlest Reich, just finished filming. And they've got a few new puppets that are going to be in this one, new designs of some of them. It looks like it's going to be a pretty good movie. Most of the puppets have been redesigned to where they're a little bit darker looking. They look a little bit more evil.
I'm
hoping the special effects make them move a little bit faster than they used to.
I hate to have to tell you this, man. I was... hoping that we'd never have to discuss it. When I was at Frightmare a couple weeks ago, there was a table with some people that had custom made Puppet Master dolls that were about this big.
Wow.
Fully articulated and super detailed.
Did you get a card?
They didn't have cards. It was all custom shit. I'm gonna try to dig in and see if I can find them. They were like $400 or $500, and they had signs everywhere that said no pictures, no photography.
Really?
So I was like trying to surreptitiously get one, and they're like, I mean, I couldn't get one clear without exposing myself. Plus, he was like right across the thing from a handler who was handling one of the celebrities. So I was like, shit, shit, shit. But I did not manage to get a card for that one or contacts. But
I'll dig it up. You know, there's a bunch of people that make custom figures and stuff. So
they were beautiful. They were
Well, the designs gorgeous. Of those puppets are just classic, man. They, mm-hmm. That like it's one of the reasons I love that movie.
So is this going to be a reboot or is it going to be a?
This is a sequel.
A sequel.
Yeah. Yep. The Littlest Reich. So it was going back to the German roots and everything from part two was where they really got into those Nazi roots with Puppet Master. They went to Toulon, and Toulon died. They went ahead and got his. The Nazis were the ones after his secret, wanting to harness it for their own evil use. And one little fun bit of news that I got here, prom season is upon us. And this one girl who is I hope my daughter turns out to be like this. She went to prom in a coffin, pretending to be dead. And once her and her beau got to prom, she all of a sudden came back to life as a zombie. And they entered the prom together. It was a very,
that's very cool.
Horror-themed little deal that they had going on. It was pretty neat. I thought that was cool. In this age of promposals, which I think are the stupidest thing I've ever heard of in my life, my son was forced to do one. My son was forced to do one for his girlfriend of 2 years. And I told him, I said, well, is there a chance she's going to say no? Because if she's not, you shouldn't have to do a stupid proposal. Why are you doing this? Yeah. So prom is coming up for him this weekend. Very exciting.
So
that's where we're at with the current state of Hollywood.
That's our new segment. We'll figure out whether we put it at the beginning or the end.
But we're going to spend a little bit of time just talking about just some current events when it comes to the horror genre, whether it be, you know, movies, books. Icons and things that happen to them, whether they pass away or they have a birthday or somebody's coming back out. We just want to go ahead and keep everything current, just talk a little bit and bring y'all a little opinion that we have of things that are happening.
Excellent. Well, with that, let me crack open a beer and let's get into the meat of the show.
Let's into these heartless damn women.
Bitches, man.
You know, the thing about evil women, it's not supposed to be in their nature. You know, when you think about women are mothers, they're the nurturing type. They're not supposed to be the evil ones that commit murders, whether it be mass murders or...
I disagree. I understand what you're saying.
Right.
But in my experience, that's I've worked for a lot of women, and they're ruthless.
Yeah, they can be pretty hard. But I think about my mom.
And I'm not talking about in terms of like they're killed, but they have that killer instinct. And I really think that killer instinct is amplified by that nurture nature, you know, that need to take care of those around them. So if you've got like a high power CEO and she's maybe doesn't have children, or maybe she does, but she's just ruthless and she's on top of it. In my opinion, that's kind of an extension of that natural need to control the environment and make sure that everything goes according to plan.
Right.
There's some really great sci-fi out there, like futuristic sci-fi, where the armies have been replaced. The men in the armies have been replaced. Like, it's been a shift that at some point they discovered that in co-ed situations, women and men together, women will be a little bit more demure and look to the men as the protector. But once you remove the men from the equation, the women are quite a bit more ruthless.
Well, this isn't a real-life example of that, but an example of that would be Why the Last Man, which is an excellent comic book series about pretty much all the men on Earth being exterminated, and everything is run by women. And some of these women are very ruthless. They like the fact that they don't have any men anymore. They want to keep it that way. So the few that are left, they're trying to hunt down and kill them.
And you look at pop culture, before we even get into it, but you look at somebody, you know, on the surface, if you look at a character like Wonder Woman, Princess Diana, Diana Prince, very much in her history, it's... you know, she's kind of she's been developed now to a point where she is at least as powerful as Superman in a lot of ways, and mm-hmm. in some ways more, because she actually calls upon magic, which is one of his weaknesses. But if you look at where she comes from, the Amazon Island, the Paradise Island, it's extremely militant.
Well, historically, Amazon women have been there.
And they are, they're constantly training for war. Constantly training for war. Well, there's no male influence on that island.
Right. It came from somewhere.
And you just take it as a given, as in that seems legit. I mean, they're Amazon women, they're a warrior culture. But if the men are the ones that are so warmongering,
where did that instinct come from?
Why didn't they lose that in all of their time that they were isolated?
Right. I could dig what you're saying.
So I think that there is a perception that people accept that women are generally nicer, the fairer sex. But I think the reality is that they're just as mean as everybody else.
Well, you know,
sometimes they're meaner.
Going to what you said about, you know, giving the example of the woman CEO, like a woman in power, that is empowered, I guess you could say, and allows that. A lot of the most evil women in history have been part of monarchy. They've been
women in power.
Women in power, yeah. And, you know, we could start off with talking about Elizabeth I, also known as Bloody Mary. She was a cold-hearted bitch. She didn't mess around. She was the first woman to successfully claim the throne of England. She enjoyed support and sympathy during the early parts of her reign. But quickly she slipped public favor as she became known for her crimes against Protestants. And we're going back to that religious war. Bloody Queen Mary became a legendary woman for all the wrong reasons. Queen Mary ultimately ended up terrorizing thousands of Protestants after she inherited the throne in England. Her first cousin, once removed, initially proclaimed queen, but Mary got rid of her. She ended up being beheaded and executed. Returned to England. Skipped a page. Once she took the throne from her cousin, she returned England to the Catholic faith. And to do so, she had hundreds of religious dissenters burned at the stake, similar to what we were talking about earlier, with forced Catholicism, I guess you could say. Hence her nickname, Bloody Mary. Her legacy was not long-lived. After her death, Roman Catholicism once again abolished by her younger half-sister and successor, Elizabeth I. Religious wars are just some of the bloodiest ones you think about. And, you know, we're talking about that area of the world, you know, that Middle East area. Holy wars have been going on over there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what makes anybody think they're ever going to stop it.
Oh, they're not. I don't think they... I don't think that they're... That's part of the strategy.
You think it's to control it or put the right person on top? Because there has to be some kind of, you know, reason for even bothering with it.
Well, I think that... Well, we're still reeling from things that happened during World War I.
Yeah.
You know, during the Great War. But a lot of your... And this is not... I don't want to go into a discussion on, like, Islam and
right.
sex and stuff. You know, offshoots... Not sex, but sex of Islam.
The CT.
But if you ever read about Genghis Khan... So the great Khans came, and they were the nation, the Islamic nations were quite modern by comparison. They had reading, they had literature, they had poetry and art, they had science and commerce, and they were not warlike. I mean, they were less warlike. You know, they were not warlike for whatever sorts of city states used to exist whenever they. You know, carry out wars every now mm-hmm. and then. But when the Mongols came, they completely laid waste to them, and they never recovered. They never recovered that art and the culture and everything, and they ended up getting scattered to the winds, and a whole lot of it rose up into tribalism, and so, you know, you got those people over there that you're not real fond of, and they think differently than you, and it's always a matter of holding on to your own culture, your mm-hmm. own city, your own family, your own people.
Right.
And that's been how they... That's pretty much how they operated for a really, really long time. And they were they were coming into the modern age right around the time of World War One, and then they got completely lambasted again by war, and they got scattered again. Those lines got drawn strangely. And then they got drawn again in World War II 20 years later. So you had the United States and Britain, two ostensibly Christian nations, drawing the lines for a whole bunch of Islamic sects. And so you take a whole bunch of people who would naturally self-segregate and kind of have their own little areas of being, and you draw a big circle around them and call them Iraq.
Right.
And then you put a puppet master, or not a puppet master, but you put a puppet in charge. Well, these people don't want to get along.
They don't want to get along.
But they don't necessarily want to fight.
Yeah, they just want to be themselves.
But they want to be their own self, but they're being forced together. And holy wars are always about power. It's rarely about belief. It's the people who believe one thing, you can stir them up to fight against somebody else who believes something different or even slightly different. But, you know, if you just take, like, red-letter Christianity, and you're like, you know, Jesus basically said, don't fight, everybody get along and be nice to each other. But then somebody over here says, yeah, but he also said this, and then they argue about it. And then that's where, but it's the factions in power. She didn't want Protestantism because the church had power.
And that's just it. You know, the thing about it is, anything with power, you know, I've always said this, Catholic Church is the largest religious organization in the world. Anything that big, that much power, is going to have corruption.
And it's also going to hold on to every little bit of power it can.
It's not going to want to let it go. And that's where the corruption comes from.
Right.
Do it at all costs. And it's with any organization of that size. You know, there's just not just religion. You know, it's just people in power want to stay there. There's a reason why the egomaniac wants to become all-powerful.
Absolutely.
And he's not going to give it up. You know, it's... So we need to start to scare that commune where we just all get along.
That's it.
Okay. On a list of the most evil women in the world, we've talked about this woman before, but the Countess of Bachelor, where do you think she would fall in that list?
I think she's up there pretty heavily. I mean,
she's not even in the top 50% on this list.
She's not. She killed like 600 little girls and bathed in their blood.
Yes. But there were a lot of women that were involved in the Nazi concentration camps. And that's where some of the really just psychotic stuff happened.
Well, let's aside. We can go deep into this one. There were a lot of evil women in the concentration camps. And I'm rarely one, although I seem to be doing it more and more lately. But it's only for sake of discussion and a little bit of critical thinking. There are a lot of evil people in military and bureaucratic roles. That whole just following orders thing, it's not a defense in a court, especially after Nuremberg. But prior to Nuremberg, commands come down from the boss and they say, exterminate Block 3. Your choices are pull the lever.
Or be accused of treason and get killed.
All you want to do is go home.
You'll get this over with and go home.
Get it over with and go home. Does that make... Morality doesn't really enter into that. We talked about in the war how, like, people will run forward into machine gun fire rather than turn around to one guy with a pistol. There's a nationalism. There's a mentality that pushes you forward. It keeps you pushing that button and shocking the person on the other side just because authority told you to do it. Evil? Absolutely. But Battery brought people in.
Yep.
Of her own volition. And she had her lackeys do it for her. So those lackeys could also be considered some of the most evil people in the world, but knowing what was going to happen to those girls.
Well, I think the only reason that she falls lower on this list is because these people have a little bit of argument about how much is legend and how much actually happened.
Fair enough.
I think that's the main thing, you know, because, you know, once it was caught and found out, you know, you started having all the stories about, you know, the vampire tendencies, you know, what was the reason for her doing this, you know, just exactly what was the extent of it and how much of it just got embellished, mm-hmm. which happened a lot. I mean, it happens a lot even today. But yeah, she was a crazy bitch. Member of the royal family, but she had no power. She was just kind of like a cousin, you know, mm-hmm. just hanging out there. She lived alone in a castle, and it's said to have tortured and killed hundreds of girls for no reason at all. She managed this career as a serial murderer by luring hopeful young girls to her castle with promises of a job. Kind of like a pimp. Mm-hmm. Complaints of strange happenings on her estates. Hungarian authorities decided to come and investigate, and they found dead, dying, and imprisoned girls on her premises, and evidence of the brutality was verified by hundreds of accounts by victims and witnesses. She was arrested but escaped punishment because of her status, and she just lived under house arrest, like we discussed before. Once she died, she became a folk legend, and that's where they wonder just how much of it, you know, just got embellished at that point. But needless to say, she did something, you know, as far as, you know, the level. What level is bad? You know, is 50 girls bad? Or does it have to be 150?
Well, if they say over 600, if you're half wrong,
yes,
that's still a shitload of people.
Okay. And, of course, we have plenty of examples of women that just, everything was done behind religion and stuff.
Who's the next one?
The next one is a Madagascar queen who took over after her husband's death, named Rana Valona the First. She ruled the kingdom of Madagascar from 1828 to 1861. Her main policy was that of isolationism. She was determined to keep the island of Madagascar protected from European colonization. That's what she was worried about. This might have been a noble idea, but in order to carry out such policies, she first had to conquer nearby kingdoms and expand her influence throughout the island. She then used forced labor and enacted a harsh judicial system during this brutal military campaign and banned Christianity. Those put to trial could merely be accused by anyone of small things like practicing. Somebody says, hey, he's a Christian. They're going to go ahead and take care of him. You know, even if he's mad because, you know, that guy had a steak for dinner last night and he had to eat chicken. Thousands were tried and put to death. Her methods of justice were also bizarre and brutal. Someone on trial would be forced to eat poison along with 3 pieces of chicken skin. If the accused vomited up all 3 pieces of skin, they were declared innocent. And if they could not vomit all of the skin, they were guilty. That's pretty scientific.
But they also ate poison, so...
Overall, these policies and military campaigns caused the loss of millions of lives. The population of Madagascar actually shrank from 5 million to 2.5 million in 6 years. Eat a bit. That's pretty bad. When you see a shift in a country's population...
2.5 million people is a...
50%.
Tremendous amount of people.
Yeah.
And again, try to put the human on that. There's little pink tennis shoes. There's soccer balls. There's honey-do lists that don't ever get done. There's dinner on the stove, but daddy didn't come home because the neighbor is pissed off and they called him a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the kind of stuff. Those montages at the end of movies where they go through and they show, like, the places that the characters have been
right.
throughout the movie, and that's the kind of stuff that humanizes it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. 1828 to 1861, she ruled. And this was another one where her husband died. So this was a woman with no male influence that was causing all this stuff to happen. All right, moving on. Ilse Cockburn. Known in history as the Witch of Buchenwald, Ilse was the wife of Karl Koch, who commanded the Buchenwald concentration camp and Danik. She's one of the first prominent Nazis to be tried by U.S. military for her crimes. Ilse was known as a brutal guard of these Nazi concentration camps. Her trial received worldwide attention as survivors described her as a sadistic, accusing her of taking souvenirs in the form of human skin from her victims.
Wow.
Yeah, she ended up committing suicide while she was in prison. What she got? Okay, Irma Greese was another Nazi guard who was known for being a particularly chilling figure at several concentration camps. As a guard and later a warden, she was in charge of tens of thousands of female prisoners throughout her career. This chick sounds like Isla, the she-wolf of the Nazi SS right here, man. For all of you that don't know who that is, that's some exploitation films from the 70s. about the a woman named Isla who ran concentration camps, and it was some pretty crazy movies. She's in charge of tens of thousands of female prisoners throughout her career. She subjected them to torture, beatings, and excessive and arbitrary murder. She was known for enacting both physical and psychological torture to on those in the prison. She was executed. They didn't give her a chance to kill herself. Marianne Cotton. I just love that name, man. It reminds me of King of the Hill. Not all women who committed horrible crimes in history were in positions of power. Okay, so this is a different one. Marianne Cotton was more or less a regular woman who realized she could collect money upon the deaths of her children and husband from life insurance payouts. After the death of her first husband and several children, she remarried and started over again. That husband ended up dying, and she remarried again. And on. Finally, she was caught when suspicions arose after the death of her fourth husband. She finally went to trial, and all it was discovered that she had likely murdered 21 people, including 12 of her own children. Her husband's and her mother.
I'm pretty sure if it's not her, there's one. The Lore podcast did an episode. Sounds familiar. Like she was dealing.
That was her job.
But yeah, they found a whole bunch of bones in the pigsty. She would kill them and then feed them to the pigs, or maybe just drug them and feed them to the pigs.
Right. Then it happened recently to a child. I read about it the other day. You just hit that memory. It's horrible, horrible, horrible. Children dying just always. Okay. Delphine Lalaurie. I remember her. She's from New Orleans. Delphine Lalaurie was a beautiful and popular lady in New Orleans, socialite. Unfortunately, she hid a dark and horrible secret, which finally came to light when a fire broke out in her mansion. I don't know if you know, ever heard of this.
I've heard of her.
Broke out in her mansion during a party. Firefighters entered her home. They discovered two slaves chained to the stove. In the attic, they found several disfigured slaves who had been wounded, badly hurt, and mutilated. She would just torture her slaves just horribly for no reason. No mm-hmm. reason other than... No,
she's sadistic.
She's sadistic, yes. Other slaves were forced to wear spiked collars that prevented them from moving their heads. Deceased slaves were found buried under her mansion. Although a mob arrived to protest the atrocities and she fled, the rescued slaves were forced to endure further humiliation when they were put on public display. All the ones that were disfigured and everything were just set out there for people to look at. This wicked woman was never caught after she left New Orleans. It was reported she fled to France, and she was never brought to justice for her crimes. I'm sure that's a house that has some...
I went on a ghost tour. I went on a ghost tour in New Orleans mm-hmm. with a work crew, maybe 10 years ago now, and the whole tour was like, ooh, there may be vampires. Ooh, that house is haunted. We got to her house, and that's when shit got real. She told that story. She pointed at the house. She
right.
said, this was her house, and then. I'm cynical, so I looked it up later, and yeah, that was her house. Like, standing in the presence of pure evil.
Evil, there. Right. And you know, that story always reminded me of the Tales from the Hood vignette, where it was the souls of the dead slaves were put into the dolls, mm-hmm. and they stayed in the house. And it's horrible stuff. You know, it's a dark part of our history. Belle Gunness. Similar to Marianne Cotton in both appearance... and style. She was a large, strong Norwegian-American woman.
That was the one on Lore.
Okay. Was empowered by the knowledge that she could receive payouts after the death of her three children and husband. After she got rid of her first victims, her first husband and her children, she took the insurance money and bought a home, which then mysteriously burned down. Then remarried, had another child, and killed both her second husband and his daughter. At this point, investigators became suspicious. Go figure. But she managed to convince them she had nothing to do with any of these tragic accidents. At this point, Gunn has changed her method slightly. She put her property on the market, and everyone who came to look at it was robbed and disappeared mysteriously. Once locals called on her, Guinness disappeared. Gunness. She may have been murdered herself or faked her own murder, but the fate of Gunness is still unknown to this day. Chillingly, many human remains are found on her property. More than 40 people were suspected to have been murdered by this woman.
Let me add on to that, because I recently it was the Lore podcast. Shout out to Lore, one of the greatest podcasts on the air right now. he did a whole show on her, and she may have disappeared, la-di-da-da-da. There's more to the story at the end. So she had a house, and she had a lover. I don't think it was a husband yet. And the house burned down, and she apparently died in the fire. But like a farmhand or somebody said that he was charged with bringing a body from the morgue and didn't know why. So basically, he brought a body from the morgue and set it on the bed and then set fire to the house while she disappeared. And it ended up, then they ended up excavating the grounds and found a tremendous amount of human bones in the.
And this was probably the 1800s. You know, they didn't have dental records or anything. Mm-hmm. No way of identifying it. You get away with that kind of shit back then.
Yep.
It's crazy, man. Women! That's why I'm single. Okay, let's talk about Wilhelmina, otherwise known as Minnie Dean. Minnie has the dubious honor of having been the only woman to ever be executed in New Zealand. Minnie's crime was truly twisted. She pretended to help young girls who were pregnant. See where this is going, I'm sure. In the late 19th century, young girls who became pregnant were stigmatized, and therefore it was common practice for these scared mothers to give their illegitimate children to strangers on baby farms who would then raise them for a small fee. However, instead of raising the children, many murdered the children who came to her and stole the money that was supposed to go towards their care. She escaped suspicion for a long time because the children were not well tracked. Records of the children that came to her were not required to be kept, and infant mortality was common at the time. The children simply vanished. In many cases, their real parents never knowing whatever happened to them. Sick, twisted people. Yeah. And I know out there you're probably thinking, well, Swamp Thing, everybody you're talking about is from the 1800s. There's still very evil women that we have to this day. Look at some of the serial killers that we've seen. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it be ones that are teamed up with another man or just killing by themselves. They can be very, very evil women with decent body counts, actually. This particular list is going by body counts. And one that was part of a duo, you remember these folks, Rosemary West. She was a notorious counterpart of Fred West. Rosemary, also known as Rose, was incredibly dangerous and the very epitome of soulless evil. Fred and Rosemary took advantage of young people who were naive and trusting, but picking them up off the street, bringing them to their home, and promising food and lodging. The fate that awaited these unlucky girls and young women was truly the stuff of nightmares. Rose was a mother of 8 children. She was a prostitute and depraved sexual sadist who thrived on inflicting pain. Just doing it just for the love of being a sadist. Along with her equally twisted husband, she committed 10 murders, including the killing of their own child, a daughter named Heather. She was also convicted in the murder of her stepdaughter, named Charmaine. They were the product of dysfunctional childhoods. They had no conscience. They had already been abused. They just kind of cold to the world. You know, just looking at these things as dolls to play with, I guess you could say. Days of torture and rape led to murders, all conducted in the House of Horrors at 25 Cromwell Street in their hometown. Many other victims may also have suffered and been killed to feed the insatiable appetites of this couple. The body count is listed at 10, maybe up to 20. There are 20 more that were missing at that time. Mm. Yeah. Another one that's here, pretty close to home. We talked about that. Oh, you know, Belle Gunness's body count's at 42, they think. By the way, that's a lot of people. That's 2 more than they thought. Another more modern one. We talked about her already. You see, I believe we may have Beverly Allen. She's a nurse. Nurses are supposed to care for people, make sure they're taken care of and that they get healthy. Also dubbed the Angel of Death, this serial killer is of English birth. Beverly Allett was a registered nurse who abused her position in order to feed her dark desires. Innocent children were targets of Allett's heinous acts, which included injecting potassium chloride and their insulin into their small bodies in order to cause cardiac arrest. Like many serial killers, this woman's need to murder escalated rapidly. She attacked 13 children total in her ward that she was working in. Attacks occurred over a period of 2 weeks. The children she preyed on ranged in age from only 7 weeks old to 5 years of age. Psychiatrists who examined Allett after her arrest concluded that she suffered from a strange mental health disorder known as Munchausen syndrome by proxy. Caused her to hurt and kill children in order to get attention from others. I've seen that more than once with different people. As a girl, Allett had derived much pleasure from dressing up as an injured person, which would include fake casts, etc. Later, she would injure herself and seek out constant attention from medical professionals. It's happened before.
I'm familiar with that. not personally, thank God. But I'm familiar with the Munchausen syndrome by proxy. Right. And so, but basically, yeah, people will, if they don't, they'll make their children sick in order to give them a reason to take them to the doctor, and then it makes, like, they get some sort of adulation from the attention they get.
Right.
Because they have a sick kid, like, oh, I'm so sorry, and blah, blah, blah. They're like, oh, that makes me feel good. It's like a fucked up way to get likes on Facebook or something.
Right.
And,
This is to a deeper extent.
Well, it's a deeper, it makes you wonder sometimes whenever you look at people, you know, it's like, and again, we've talked about it before, where I have to compare what I do with a healthy brain to what other people do that maybe not so much. Everybody likes to get a Facebook like. Everybody likes it when people are paying attention. You know, it just is what it is. I prefer when people like something clever that I said, or something that I did. Like, look, here's a piece of art that I did. Like,
right.
I don't really care too much about saying I'm having pizza and having people like it, but people thrive on that.
Right.
There are people that actually get, it's a dopamine injection, you know, from their brain whenever people like their post.
Yeah, on Facebook. I know people that they'll legitimately get upset and they put a picture up and they get no likes.
Right. So, normal people like to be praised for accomplishment. Abnormal people like to be praised for nothing. Fucked up people like to be praised for things that they do that are bad. So, we're talking about those people.
Right. Well, she is currently serving 13 life sentences.
It's not enough.
She deserves to die. But she pled insanity and she's in a mental health hospital for 13. But all the family, a lot of the families of the victims have already said that if she ever comes out, they're going to kill her. So she's probably going to be there till she dies for sure. Going on the same theme, we're talking about a local girl, Andrea Pia Yates.
Jesus.
The epitome of absolute fucking evil. Sometimes severe mental illness can play a role in crimes. Personality disorders such as narcissism are often present, but they can be much more serious illnesses such as schizophrenia. It causes the sufferer, and you know, we're going through the mental health part of this and everything. A lot of people defended her because of these reasons. Postpartum depression, so on and so forth. Don't care. She deserves to die. The kids didn't do shit. I don't care what voices she was hearing telling her to do what. In the case of Andrea Yates, who killed her 5 children by drowning them in a bathtub, one at a time, bringing one in, killing them, and getting the next one and killing them. They say there were many red flags to her serious mental illness. Of all the women on the list, she seems the most likely to be clinically insane. She was not diagnosed as schizophrenic, but she had serious mental health illnesses such as psychotic breaks, suicide attempts, and severe postpartum depression. You ever met a schizophrenic?
I've met medicated schizophrenics.
I've met several of them. They and just talking to them, it's very real what they're going through.
Oh, absolutely.
And most of them was, and the thing about it is that you can run into them every day. You know, there's guys that I know that had, you know, active schizophrenia. They mixed paint at Home Depot. But at the same time, he would tell me that the TV would talk to him, but he was able to control it. You know, the TV wasn't telling him to kill anybody. It was just, you know, saying, you need to go grab some milk because we're almost out. That kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's a real thing.
Oh, absolutely.
But something is broken to the point where it's dangerous. What do you do?
You don't know it's dangerous until they have that psychotic episode, and then, you know, that, well, well, with her, there was plenty of
warnings.
There was
plenty, yeah, I was about to say, that there's plenty of warnings.
And apparently her husband, which I think should have been an accessory, her husband talked her down or made excuses for her. And so other people thought she was dangerous. Even she thought she was dangerous. And he's like, no, no, no. And if you have severe postpartum depression, you don't just go off and willy-nilly have another kid.
Yeah.
Like,
because it's just going to get worse.
Right. You know, so there was so much wrong with that case, and it was such a horrible tragedy, the whole thing, all the way through. But at the very least, she needed to stay in. She got out.
Right. Yeah, it's just a horrible case all around. She had been thinking about committing those crimes. I guess she just never asked for help on that side. She asked her husband for help with dealing with the kids, but while he said that he would, it was just too late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it happened. And like I said, it's just a horrible, horrible story. Another one similar on those lines that I'm sure you're going to remember is a young lady from South Carolina. I believe she did this behind a man, as a matter of fact. But Susan Smith, remember her?
Sounds familiar.
Susan Smith's psyche was a witch's brew of personality disorders, culminating in the deaths of her two very young sons, Michael and Alex.
She's the one that drove them in the
creek. She's the one that put them in the car and drove them in the lake. A woman drove to the edge of a South Carolina lake, got out, and put the car in drive. After releasing the brakes, she stood silently and watched the vehicle. She didn't do anything to help at all. She knew what was going on. You know, she did this on purpose. She stood silently and watched the vehicle where the baby slept, peacefully in the back seat, sinking into the depths. She then phoned the police in hysterics, claiming that she had been carjacked by a black guy. They say childhood sexual abuse and incest were perhaps the catalyst for Smith's illusions and dreams. She claimed to have had a sexual relationship with her own stepfather. You know, she had plenty of baggage, I guess you could say, that had caused her to have a lot of problems mentally. As she grew into adulthood, Susan Smith displayed a growing desire for sexual attention as well as a need for ideal love and grandiose, glamorous life. And this goes back to that attention thing. You know, her kids are going to die, and she blames it on somebody else. She's going to be on the news. People will be wanting to help her and be worried about her. In time, police put two and two together, separating the lie Susan Smith told from the cold, hard facts of the gruesome crime. It's just, how can you do that, man? You know, I used to work offshore. Occasionally, we'd take boats out. There was one time that we got into a boat accident with some, actually, it was a bunch of reps from Philip Morris. They were going on a duck hunting trip. Whenever we hit them, we were all inside, and they T-boned our boat and capsized. When we got out on deck, one of the guys jumped in. A few of us came over the side trying to, you know, get ready to pull people out. And it was early in the morning, and a lot of the folks were actually in the cabin inside sleeping. I think four people total got ejected out of the boat, and they ended up being found dead further down. But there were three people in the cabin itself. They pulled one of the guys out, and they had a little air pocket right there. And before he got out, there were two young boys in there. I say young, 18 and 19. They were then to follow him. They were nervous. They didn't know what to do. They panicked. I mean, I don't know if you ever did any kind of water survival training, but when you're in a helicopter and they flip you upside down, it's really easy to forget what the door is. Like, really, really easy. Well, he came out, and they didn't follow him. And he had broke his leg, so we got him up. I remember I had a tool T-shirt on, I ripped, because he was bleeding, and I took my shirt and I made a tourniquet on his leg. All of a sudden, that boat started sinking real quick. We could hear those boys beating on the bottom of that boat. And there was nothing we could do about it. I don't know how this bitch could let her kids do that and go through that. It was just horrible, man. And what happened with us, the boat captain was sleeping and letting his first mate drive the boat. And he put in jail for killing those people.
Oh, wow.
Yep. It was a bad one, man. I mean, six people died altogether.
They hit your boat.
We were actually in the wrong. We were supposed to give right away. And they hit us, they T-boned us, but we weren't supposed to be there. We were supposed to stop and let them pass. Yeah, it was a bad night. Needless to say. Okay. Off of that one. These kinds of women often involve children.
It really does seem there's a lot of them.
Yeah, it does seem like that, very much so. Carla Homolka, blonde Canadian woman, will always be known as a traitor to her own gender. Her desire to please her partner, notorious Scarborough rapist and serial killer Paul Bernardo, led her to assist him in the kidnapping, rape, and murder of three young women, one of whom was her own sister, who died accidentally after being drugged by Carla. She showed no mercy for the young girls in imprisonment in her own home, even as they begged for her help. To one she gave a teddy bear, scant comfort indeed. She just went ahead and just to keep her man happy, just tortured these women and allowed them to be just brutalized. After her arrest, she cut a sweet deal with authorities in order to get a lighter sentence. She gave them information about Paul's crimes and assisted the prosecution in convicting him. Her husband claims she committed all the murders herself. While in custody, she was permitted to attend university, where she earned a degree. Such educational opportunities were denied forever to her brilliant victims. You know, this woman went ahead to have a regular life, chance to be successful when she had ended so many girls' lives that, you know, they had more of a right to exist than her, for sure. And she blamed it all on being the victim. And to this day, she still plays the victim, putting responsibility for her terrible crimes on her husband. However, psychologists argue about her real motivations. Some feel she was traumatized by the events of her ill-starred marriage. Others are certain there was and is a darkness to her psychopathy under the facade. One interesting fact is that Carla, after the death of her own sister, complained in a letter to her friend that her wedding to Paul might need to be postponed. She was mad that her sister died at a bad time for her wedding. That just kind of shows you what kind of sick woman this was. Let's move on to a Eileen Wuornos. This woman actually had an 8 victim kill count. Claims that she had a dreadful childhood marked by abandonment and incest. Warped the young soul of this woman, who stored up more rage against society and men. You guys may remember this woman. If I'm not mistaken, she was portrayed in the movie Monster. Do you remember that movie Monster?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do believe that was Eileen Wuornos. Early sexual experiences marked the girl. She became pregnant at the age of 13, and the child was given up for adoption. Teen years remained turbulent and hard-scrabble, and by the age of 15, she was thrown out of her grandfather's home. Who was the actress that played her in that movie? I'm trying to remember. Because I remember she did a great job.
Charlize Theron.
Yeah, she looked totally different. She actually changed herself physically for that role. Displaying all the signs of antisocial personality disorder, broke the law, robbed stores with weapons, married a 7-year-old man who she physically abused, arrest and drunken conduct marred and then ended her unlikely relationship. So her elderly husband brought in the law to keep her away. In time, she found a lesbian lover named Tyra, which was the...
Christina Ricci.
Yeah, Christina Ricci in the movie. And she worked as a prostitute to earn a living for both of them. Working the highway, selling her body was a dangerous career. And she had many victims, which I went... Oh, I lost my page. I'm somewhere around here. But essentially, she was prostituting on these highways. She'd get these guys, she'd rob them, she'd kill them, go back to her hotel to meet her her girlfriend. And, you know, they didn't care either way. They were very heartless. I mean, they were just... She was a man-hater to the fullest extent possible.
I believe she was executed, wasn't she?
Yes, I believe so. Let me see. Killed 8 men altogether, 7 of them in the state of Florida. When he slowed down, Wuornos never lost a rage of future terrible crimes. Before her execution, she lashed out one last time, blaming the media, her lawyers, and society for her fate. Never anybody else's. It was never her fault. It was everybody else's. And granted, I understand that she went through a lot when she was a child, but it isn't. A lot of people do. You know, often talking to when my dad died when I was 9 years old. My dad died in front of me. He had a heart attack in the living room with me. It messed me up. It never messed me up to the point where I was going to kill anybody.
Yeah. That would mess you up.
You know, it. I can't talk about these anymore, man. These are depressing.
It gets bad. And most of them have to do with children.
That's the hard part of it, you know.
Men kill women. Women kill children. Cycles around.
Yes.
Yeah. That was kind of a low note, man.
I know, man. We went from a cute girl going to prom in a coffin with her zombie boyfriend to just sick bitches.
Bitches, man. That's the only way we can really end that story. I would like to be the first to apologize for the dark turn that took. I'm just joking. Those are good.
Go there often.
We go there. That's what we do. But hey, man, we got so much stuff coming up. Met up with some folks at Frightmare Weekend a couple weeks ago that I'm going to reach out to, and maybe we can start getting some little interview stuff going on.
There's some really cool things going on with the horror game in Houston that we're going to start bringing to light a little bit, making sure you guys are aware of.
Did you guys know there's a year-round, I don't know if it's open every night, but there's a haunted house that does events year-round called Kingwood Asylum.
And it's a very good haunted house. Very good makeup. It's pretty impressive. These guys involved with this haunted house are passionate about what they do.
I don't know if he's the owner, but he's like one of the main guys. He posts all day long on social media. I don't think I've ever seen him outside a costume. I saw Dribbles the Clown at Frightmare.
Oh, okay.
I didn't talk to him because he was busy scaring people. But yeah, we're gonna get old Daryl and Dribbles on the show here coming soon. As soon as they're done building whatever kind of box that they think they're gonna trap us in. But if anybody knows me, they know I strap. Especially So yeah, I'm not gonna let them bitches get in on me.
Oh no. Stay one step ahead.
So as always, like, comment, share, tell people about the podcast. Hey, if you want some stickers, hit me up. I will. I'll float you a few. I've got a few extras to go. And I guess
stay scary.
Shit, I'm gonna go cry now.
I'm gonna go find a movie to watch.
Take me out tonight. Where there's music. Driving in your car, I never, never want to go home, because I haven't got one anymore. Take me out tonight, because I want to see people and I want to see life. Driving in your car, oh please don't drop me home, because it's not my home, it's their home, and I'm welcome no more. And if a double-decker bus crashes into us, to die by your side is such a heavenly way. Tom Trump kills the both of us. To die by your side, well, the pleasure, the privilege is mine. Take me out tonight. Take me anywhere, I don't care, I don't care, I don't care. And in the dark, chances come at last, but then a strange fear gripped me and I just couldn't ask. Take me out tonight, oh take me.